Mitzvah Reish Nun Gimel 253 Shelo Nichtov Bivsarenu Kisoves Ka'aka, that we should not tattoo ourselves. Shelo Nichtov Bivsarenu Kisoves Ka'aka, that we should not put a tattoo on our flesh. Shenemar Kisoves Ka'aka Lo Sitnu Bachem, you shall not place in yourselves a tattoo. Ve'ha'inyan Hu, what's a tattoo? Kemo Shosir Yom Yishma'ilim, that as the Arabs do nowadays. Apparently, this was an Arab practice. I don't know if it's particularly associated with Arabs nowadays. Now,
Berbers, actually, I think, very cool too.
But nowadays, common among non-Arabs as well. Shekosvim bivsaram kaksav mechuka v'sakua she'eno nimchak la'olam, that they write on their flesh a type of writing that is set there permanently. So it's interesting to note that the Sefer Chinuch uses over here the lashon of permanently, which is a lashon that's also used by Rashi and Makos when it discusses the isser of Ksoves Kaika. So the question is, does it literally have to be permanent in order to constitute at least an isser deraisa of Ksoves Kaika, or perhaps not? So most of the Chronim who are analyzing this, they say, it doesn't mean literally it has to be forever. If you have a tattoo that somehow, you know, not as deep or who knows what, if you have a tattoo that's going to last for years, and then maybe in 15 years there'll be no trace of it left, then that's also an Isser D'oraisa. But others say, no, we take this word literally, that it literally has to last for your entire life in order for it to be at least an Isser D'oraisa of a tattoo.
Would it not be possible to remove it?
What do you mean? No, if you have now laser treatments where you can remove tattoos, that's irrelevant to the isser. That gets considered l'olam. It can last permanently, is the point, not that it actually does.
And it doesn't come up by washing it or something like that. You
know, right.
I mean, removing the tattoo.
Ve'in achiyuv ela b'chzav chokog v'roshum b'dyoa b'kchal o b'shar tzivonim haroshmin. So the only, at least the d'oraisa is only applicable if you put in something that's like ink or like dye or kchal is really something like used for makeup, like an eyeliner, like a type of, again, you also used in the Gemara, as you put it in your eye for it as a treatment for certain things. Whatever it is, it's a permanent type of ink. Obishar tzivon haroshim, any type of permanent color. V'chein amru b'makos ki'akea velo kosav, if you make an incision and you didn't write, kilomar shelo rishamo b'tzeva, if you make a scar on yourself. You don't want a tattoo that says mother, but you can't afford the ink, so you just go M, you know, cutting O, T, H, whatever. So then that is not the Isser D'oraisa of a tattoo. Or kosa velo kiakea, or you wrote on your skin and you didn't make an incision that makes it go into your flesh and last forever, or at least a very long time. Or you write something on your flesh, and you don't write and you don't make any sort of incision. So you're not liable. So you're only liable for the biblical prohibition if you have to make an incision and use a permanent type of ink.
So they stamp, you know, something on your hand to make sure that you've been paid, and
good question. Excellent question. So the Minchas Chinuch analyzes this. He says, what do we mean over here that you're not chayiv? Does it mean that there's an Isser D'Rabbanan over here to do either one of these things, at least the writing part? So he says that he has a very funny thing. He says, with these types of things, you say, puk chazi mai amadavar, that the Gemara says about certain things where you're not sure what the halacha is, go out and see what the people are doing. So when the Gemara says that for certain types of things, it doesn't mean that the minag is always takes precedence over any type of learning the halacha, but it means that for certain types of things, only when halacha is rofefis, when you're not sure what the din should be based on the learning, then you go out and you should judge what the people do. One of the times it's used in the Gemara is about the bracha bar nefoshos. So how you so it says that the different sheets. Fine. So the Minchas Chinuch says about this. So we don't know whether it means that it's still an Isser D'Rabbanan or that you're off scot-free if you do one of these things. So puk chazi mayam adavar, and we see that Jews don't write on themselves, so it must be that there is an Isser D'Rabbanan. What do you mean? Lo ra'inu ein araya. It only means a positive thing. When you see pukhazim ayadavar, if you can go out and analyze what the people are actually doing because they're doing something active, that's what pukhazim ayadavar means. But here he says, no, you see that Jews never write on their skin, so that must be an issur d'rabbanan. It's hard to understand exactly what the Minchas Chinuch is getting at over here. But in any event, even if it is an issur d'rabbanan to write on your body, it means with a permanent, if not mamish permanent, but a very long-lasting type of ink. But if something is not long-lasting at all, just like if you, you know, if you're forgetting something on your grocery list and you don't have any paper and you take a regular pen and you write milk on your finger and it just washes off in 2 seconds after you do that, so that's not usur at all. The same thing with these stamps that you get at the amusement park. So that's not any permanence, though. You just wash it off. I mean, it's a little more permanent than regular pen, but it's you just wash it off, and it's not a problem. It's the same reason in Akafas Harosh. By the way, this issue about whether here Pater means Pater Mutter, Pater Aval Aser, is the same question as when we analyzed last time the Rambam Shita about shaving. That normally, when, at least in later halachic literature, it's not so systematically used this way in the Shi'il Tanoim, for example. So it means when you say chayav, that you're liable for punishment, means that that's an issur d'oraisa. And when you say potter, you're exempt from punishment, it means that it's not a biblical prohibition, you don't get the punishment. It means that, but you still are not allowed to do it, at least on a derabanan level. So you have a difference between chayav and putter versus asur and mutter. So if it's asur, means it's asur, at least they're abana. If it's mutter, means you're allowed to do it. No problem at all. So here, they use the words of eino chayav. And last time with the shaving, so the Rambam, when he talked about shaving the beard all the way down with scissors, so he says putter. So the question is whether he means over there exempt from punishment or not. The same thing over here. Doesn't mean that there's an isur derabanan or not about these semi-tattoos. Not going all the way with a tattoo, but semi-tattoo. Mishor sheha mitzvah ma shekosavnu ba'kofas harosh of ashkosas hazokan, that the same reason that we're not allowed to shave our payas or our beards. Samuch, that would just happen. We just learned about la'chokas kolin yani avodah zarah migufeinu v'beinenu, that it's anything that's associated with avodah zarah, we don't have anything to do with that. V'gamze min ha'shorash hazeh ba'atzmo, this tattoo is for the same reason. She'amina ha'gagoyim she'rosh min asman la'avodah zarah shelhem. So they used to say, part of the rites of service of the avodah zarah was they had to advertise that they worship this particular avodah zarah. They thought it would get on their deity's good side if they wrote the name of the deity on their skin. I think people do this also nowadays, they write.
Well, right, you know.
They draw crosses with tattoos, no?
Yeah.
Religious symbols. Unfortunately, some people.
Also, it both sounds sort of permanent devotion, like you write, you know, the name of your sweetheart on it, and then, you know. Hopefully,
correct.
Hopefully you, you know, don't want to change that too soon. You know?
Right, 100%. Fortunately, people also tattoo Mug and Dovids and different things nowadays.
Oh, yeah, they actually Hebrew letters among Goyim too. They're like,
right.
You know, phrases.
Famous misspellings.
Things, yeah, right.
Sometimes Shem Hashem also, which is
Really, also
creates not only problems of tattooing if you write Shem Hashem, but then the question is, maybe you're never allowed to take a shower because you're not allowed to expose the Shem Hashem in front of Erva.
What about Shem Hashem on the internet? Is that cord erasing?
So, it's a good question. Most post-game assume that Shem Hashem in a computer is not a problem of erasing. Otherwise, we Sofrim would have a problem also because we check things by computer. So sometimes we have computer images of tefillin and mezuzahs that appear online. Not you have to see it in front of you to actually check the kashers, but just to make sure all the words are there. It often appears on the computer screen. You want to show someone a sample, for example, of a tefillin or mezuzah to see if they want to take from a particular sofer. A lot of times you have it online. So if you close the window, so it's not there anymore. So you've already just erased Shem Hashem, but that's not the common
custom. It's not Kasiva, right?
Right, it's not Kasiva because it's absolutely no permanence whatsoever. It's just pixels in the screen, or it's just on the hard drive. It's just data. It's not considered real Kasiva, so therefore it's not really considered erasing also. There are people who are machmer on it. I remember I once sent an email showing a Ksav to some very religious, obviously, person in Bnei Brak.
He used email, though, you know.
He had kosher email. It does not. Oh, the only internet. It only has email, not the rest of the internet. You can't access the rest of it. Other people have that as well. So he said you know, he was very appreciated by sending him this, and it was looked like a very interesting ksav. But next time, could I please not send the Shem Hashem? Because as soon as he opened the file and he saw it had Shem Hashem, he just he couldn't touch his computer until it shut down by itself.
Wait, you didn't like, put the computer in Shemos, though, right?
No. that far, I guess not. That's not the commonly accepted shock,
we're
obviously.
We're on this little digression here.
Kilomar shu eved v'nimkala morshan lavodasa. So it's like people tattooed signs on their slaves to show that they belong to a certain person. They can't run away unless they, nowadays they just go to a dermatologist and have laser treatment. But in the olden days there was, unless you wanted to chop it out, which would be extremely painful, so you wouldn't, you were stuck with this particular owner because he was tattooed on you. There's actually interesting cases in the Mishnah and the Gemara in Gittin where it talks about writing a get on the hand of a slave.
A get.
So the question is, so how can you...
The slave?
No. The husband tattoos the get on the hand of the slave, and then gives the slave to his wife as a present, including the get. And that's kosher, but the question is, so A, how are you allowed to tattoo it on the hand of the slave? The whole discussion, I'm not going to get into it now, but how that is the case. Midine ha-mitzvah. The logos of the mitzvah is as follows. Ma'ashamra zikharan levracha, shekol makom shebaguf, bein megula, bein mechusa, bevgadim echalesurzeh. So normally, if you really wanted to show your allegiance to an Avodah Zarah, so you tattoo the name of the Avodah Zarah on a place where people are going to see. But if you tattoo it on a place that's always covered by clothing, then maybe that's not really included. So the Chazal tell us that you're absolutely chayev, that's absolutely a deraisa, no matter where on your body you make a tattoo. B'yaser pratea b'sof maseches makos. The rest of the details are maseches makos. V'noheges b'chol makom v'chol zman b'zchar menekevos, all plays, all times, males and females. So it's interesting. Sefer Chinuch says if you write one letter, normal on Shabbos, you have to be chayev. You're only chayev if you write two letters. But if you hear, you're chayev even if you write one letter. So what is Sefer Chinuch telling us? It could be that Sefer Chinuch is implying over here, as the sheet of some Rishonim, that you're only chayev if you write a letter. That if you write a word, but if you draw a beautiful picture, a design, so then you're not chayev. So that's not so clear. Most Rishonim seem to hold that it has to be, I mean, it can be anything. Any type of design of a tattoo, even if it's not a letter at all, is, in fact, an iser deoraisa. And this question comes up. Some hold, by the way, that if it's just like a patch of color or something, so then it's not a design, it's nothing, then that would not be an iser deoraisa. But even if it has to be some sort of meaningful picture. So all of these is not exactly clear. No, they're not. So the Minchas Chinuch writes that it's difficult, he says, to be megavev kulos. He says, Tzorichin badinim elu dem aisurei Torah legavev kulos b'zeh mokam sharishonim sasmo. So you can't grope for kulos over here when it's not clear what's going on. You really have the potential of transgressing in iser deraisa. But based on these different kulas, not like the Minchas Chinuch doesn't like any kula about these things.
Does he like kulas about anything? I mean, most people either go.
Yeah, he's not a brisker. So he says, fine. So based on all these tznadim, that maybe if it's not completely permanent, and maybe if it's not a design that's a picture or a letter, So perhaps there is room to be makel for something that's called permanent makeup. So some women don't want to have to apply makeup, hopefully women, don't want to apply makeup all the time, keep having to reapply it. So they have the form of makeup tattoo, like eyeliner, whatever it is, they have dark pigmentation implanted in their skin. So this normally doesn't last forever, it just lasts for a couple of years. And it's not a design. So based on this, and maybe it's only a derabanan, so maybe, you know, because it's very important for women to have this, and it makes their lives so much easier, and they don't have to worry about getting on their makeup before Shabbos, etc., etc., etc. So some poskim have suggested the possibility that maybe permanent makeup should be allowed, but this shita obviously is not mainstream, that we assume that, if not, it could be deraisa, but even at deraisa, there's probably at least an iser derabanan involved in applying a semi-permanent makeup.
Does loke mean lashes?
Yeah, loke means eyelashes, yeah.
Just one, so the right thing. I recall you know, in discussions of, you know, like, say, opening potato chip bags.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was probably Shortstack said, well, actually, you can't go across the little wise owl either. You know, the
correct.
The,
yes, yeah.
So, no, is there a general...
For Shabbos, Oksiva, yeah, it applies even if there's a meaningful picture, if not particularly a letter, yeah.
Oh, so no, there's a you know,
it's not mistaber here over. It's more likely that is nesudaraisa in any case. It doesn't have to be dafka letter. It's not explicit anywhere in the sources of Chazal. There has to be dafka a letter. Mm-hmm. Remember, I was told in elementary school when we learned about the isser of tattooing. So these teachers are obviously not as well informed. So they told us no, but a woman is allowed to have permanent makeup because the Torah says it's so important for a woman to look beautiful for her husband that even overrides the isser of having a tattoo, so that's not really true. That's not. There are some shittas that, for technical reasons, that it's not a tattoo. But it's not that reasoning is not correct at all. Okay, I should point out. Obviously, everybody knows this is a misconception now, but I feel like we should mention it anyway. So there is a common misconception that if you have a tattoo, you cannot be buried in a Jewish cemetery.
Oh yeah, that.
Which is not true. If there's getting a tattoo is no different from, like we pointed out, it's very connected to shaving. If you shave with a razor, you can also be buried in a Jewish cemetery. I guess that people think that since it's a degradation, it's a desecration of the body, then it's more inappropriate since it's going to be sit there for all time. You know, the tattoo is going to be desecrating the whole Jewish cemetery if the tattoo sits there. But that's not true. People make a lot of mistakes in life, and there's no reason that somebody who... unfortunately, in their youth, gets a tattoo and then becomes, you know, a little bit later on in life, becomes a fully upstanding, fully observant from a person, should not be buried in the same, right next to the Gadol Hador. There's no reason. I don't know.
So, supposing you have a tattoo and you get lashes, however many lashes you get, but if it's permanent, you can't remove it, so... You know, how do you get out of that?
You mean you think you should be lashed continuously for the rest of your life? As long as, no. Because we'll see here. Oh, this is a good question. We'll just finish up. We have the same principle as the shaving. That if somebody else shaves you, then it's allowed to shave bo maisa. You're not doing an action, so you don't get malkos. But here, it's the same thing. If you just sit in the tattoo parlor, and the tattoo artist is calmly applying the tattoo, then you don't receive the penalty of lashes. Only if you say, oh, you know, I think that line looks a little too light. Maybe, going over there and, really just giving it to him, right, to make it easier for him to apply the tattoo, then you receive the penalty of lashes. But if you apply the tattoo for yourself, you receive the penalty of lashes. But the only thing you get malchus for is the action of putting on the tattoo, not for having a tattoo. So you do it once, then with one hasra, then you only get one set of lashes. If you get 50 tattoos over the course of a lifetime, you get 50 sets of lashes. Right? Minakala yadua, lav shein b'maisa, ein lokin alav. There's a lav, if you violate a negative prohibition without engaging in a maisa, a deed, then you don't receive the penalty of lashes. So just having the tattoo, again, is not the problem. There's no obligation whatsoever. It's not like, you know, if you accidentally put something on the fire on Shabbos to cook. So in order not to complete the prohibitions, you're supposed to take it off the fire immediately. Because you haven't really finished the prohibition until the thing actually starts to cook. Just putting the pot on the fire is not the real... It's completely usher. If it continues to cook, so you'll get whatever penalty for that. But if you take it off right away, so you basically undo the sin. So here, once you get the tattoo, there's nothing to be done. There's no obligation to remove it. Getting the tattoo, not having the tattoo. Mitzvah Reishon and Daled, Mitzvah 254. Mitzvahs Hayira Min HaMikdash. The mitzvah to fear the sanctuary, meaning the Beis HaMikdash. Lira Min HaMikdash, Kelomar, Shenamidehu B'Nafsho Seinu, Makom HaPachad V'Hayira. So we have to think of the Beis HaMikdash as a place where we're supposed to be in fear, in awe. Kadeshi Yisrakechu Levaveinu Bevoeinu Sham Lespal Hakrev Karbanos. So we have the proper frame of mind. It softens our hearts when we go there to pray or to offer sacrifices. As we know, the Beis HaMikdash was also used for prayer. It wasn't just used for sacrifice. Shlomo HaMelech, when he first dedicated the Beis HaMikdash, so we have the whole Tefillah Shlomo, that's the Haftorah on Shmini Atzeres. And it says in the Navi, Ki Beis Yibes Tfilo Yikari L'chol Hamim, that in the end, that eventually, the Beis HaMikdash will be the place of prayer for all nations. So it's not just about Korbanos, it's about prayer as well. Shenemar U'mikdashi Tiro, and you shall fear my sanctuary. Feiru Zichrono L'Bracha, Feiru Zichrono L'Bracha B'Sifra, the Halachic Medrash says, with Brachos, it says the same thing in Maseches Brachos as well. Eizehu Mora, what is fear? How do you take this into account? Lo yikones lahar habayis v'maklo uv'min olo uv'afundoso uv'avak she'al raglov v'mohus hatsurim lo besadino. So you shouldn't go to Har Habayis. And we're not even talking about the grounds of the Beis HaMikdash per se. We're talking about Har Habayis, the Temple Mount, which is the outer area, which has much more relaxed rules than the actual grounds and starting of the Beis HaMikdash. We'll start with the Azara. So even to this outer area, you're not allowed to go wearing, taking your walking stick, which presumably does not apply to the discussion in the post, whether it applies to a decorative walking stick. Probably it only applies to something that you just, common walking stick that you just use to traverse the hills around Yerushalayim, but doesn't refer also maybe to something that somebody really needs to, for balance.
Oh, right.
This means a common walking stick. Uvamin alo, you're not allowed to wear shoes in Har Habayis. The Gemara Chagiga says, that quotes the Haftorah from Shabbos Chazon, that it says, Bibi kezos miyadchem remos chatzerai, that the Yeshayahu says, who asked this from you to trample my courtyards? So the one interpretation of this is that the Yeshayahu is giving people Musar for coming into Har Habayis with shoes. They couldn't be bothered to, they were so finicky that they couldn't be bothered to walk without shoes. They kept on their shoes when they walked into Har Habayis, which was not appropriate. That's this thing from the separate then by the Kohanim, that the Kohanim are only allowed to wear certain garments when they're doing their worship, so which does not include shoes. The Kohanim have to be completely barefoot. But the here, you're not just not allowed to go wearing a shoe, but you would be allowed to go wearing a sock, for example, yeah?
It should be noted, by the way, that the...
Why not?
I don't know why not, but I just read it recently in the Hamodia that somebody says they have a long-standing tradition, and the person who answered, he said, yes, you know, we know that there is a long-standing tradition that one is not allowed to walk around barefoot.
Where?
Well, some people had this hakpada, I don't know, maybe it's superstitious, that because it's associated with avelus, so in mourning you're not allowed to wear shoes, so people didn't walk around the house or anywhere without
it's
shoes,
not
except...
a real prohibition.
No, it's not a real prohibition. Absolutely not. Nope. I remember someone in the neighborhood told me that her father told them that they shouldn't even wear sneakers. They had to wear proper shoes at all times. Okay? They had to wear proper, because sneakers are associated, again, with mourning, because maybe they're not really considered shoes, although that's not so question either. Oh, so for in terms of Har Habayis, so the Gemara in Yevamos and the Rashi in the Gemara in Yevamos where it talks about chalitza, so it says that for chalitza you need a proper shoe that has to be leather, and so a sock, even if it's a very thick sturdy sock or cloth type of shoe, is not allowed for chalitza. So this is the source that maybe it's not considered a shoe, really, if it's not leather. So that's why the common custom is to be lenient, based on the Shulchan Aruch Maskins this way. A lot of Rishonim disagree, but the Shulchan Aruch says that it's not called a shoe if it's not made of leather. So therefore, you're allowed to wear leather. You're allowed to wear any type of non-leather shoe on Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'Av, whatever is the case. So that's, again, I gave a shiur on this once. That's not, many Rishonim don't agree with that, that if it's, some say that even if it's made of wood, it's still considered a shoe. And the most stringent shita is that if it protects your foot at all, it's still considered a shoe. Okay.
Socks protect your foot against socks.
Not significantly. It means something that's a little hard, and that socks are mutter on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, according to all opinions. But significantly hard, sturdy cloth shoe might be usher. But here, for Har Habayis, so a cloth shoe is apparently mutter, because the reason is it doesn't have the same, so you wouldn't walk in a cloth shoe, through a muddy puddle, and then go straight into the Beis HaMikdash. You're more finicky, you're more careful about where you walk with a cloth shoe anyway. There's a medrash quoted over here that says that when Alexander the Great wanted to come to the Beis HaMikdash, so that he didn't want to go completely barefoot, so they made him some type of anpilos, which means a sturdy type of sock or a cloth shoe, so he could go into the Beis HaMikdash. But it's not clear whether you should go into Har HaBayis wearing sneakers. The Svara isn't there. A, according to many shittas, that a sturdy shoe is considered a shoe, even if it's not actually made of leather. And it's also something that you walk through puddles with, and you know, just as dirty, as just as undignified, I guess you could say, as a regular leather shoe. So I've seen pictures of people going who go up to Har HaBayis, whether it's mutter, it's not mutter, whatever, go to the mutter places of Har HaBayis with sneakers or canvas shoes. So why would you do that? Why? It's a big shaila in the halacha as to whether that really should be allowed in the base in Har HaBayis, just because you're mekel on Yom Kippur. Again, Yom Kippur is bigger isser, possibly. Maybe wearing shoes in Yom Kippur is like the Rabbanan. It's a whole discussion as to whether anything but eating and drinking on Yom Kippur is the Rabbanan. Whatever it is, I don't know why you would get involved in wearing a sneaker or some sort of canvas shoe on Har HaBayis. You wear either a sturdy cloth, very sturdy cloth shoe, or just go with socks. Why not just go with socks? Don't go in the rainy season, I guess.
When you say Har HaBayis, what areas are we including?
I mean, I don't have a map exactly, but it's basically the area on the Temple Mount that doesn't include the actual temple courtyards or buildings. Where there's a place called there's the Har HaBayis, then you have the Azara, and then you have the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The Azara is the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, so that plus the building area would be not allowed to go to. But the Har HaBayis, you're allowed, because you have to be Tohar.
Anywhere else?
You have to be Tohar in order to go into the Azara, but in order to go to Har HaBayis, you don't have to be completely Tohar. You just can't have what's called a Tumah HaYotza Lav Migufo. You can't have a Tumah that's caused by an emission from your own body. So therefore, as long as either a man or a woman, it's one of the cases where a man would have to go to a complete kosher mikvah, but as long as they immerse, as long as the woman is not a Nida or a Zava, which a woman is used to observing anyway, or if a man is not a Balkari, which might not be as used to observing, but he has to go to a proper mikvah after becoming a Balkari, and then he's allowed to go onto Har HaBayis in theory. Some Rabbanim say that since we don't know exactly where it is, you shouldn't go at all. But at least in theory, you're allowed to go on Har HaBayis as long as you don't have a Tumah Yotzel Migufa, even though just going to the mikvah is insufficient to make you completely Tahar, because nowadays we're all Tumei Mace, we've come into contact with a dead body. In order to become Tahar from a dead body, you need to have the ashes of the Parah Aduma sprinkled on you. It's not sufficient just to go to the mikvah. The mikvah can only remove the...
Isn't there a medrash which says that Rabbi Akiva and other sages were on Har HaBayis after Beis HaMikdash was destroyed?
They were looking at Har HaBayis.
Well, you know.
Looking at the fox, right?
Looking, that doesn't...
Maybe they were. Maybe then they'll tell you, well, they had it better. They knew exactly where everything was. Nowadays, we don't know for sure where anything was, which is not really true. We have certain areas on Har HaBayis where we know pretty much for sure that it was... Only Har HaBayis, not part of the Azara. Okay, but people are going to get confused. That's why a lot of the Rabbanim say that we should not go on Har HaBayis at all nowadays. Others say, no, we should dafka go on Har HaBayis to show our connection to Har HaBayis, because the Arabs they doubt it for some reason, which is obviously ridiculous. But good word. Fine, so you're not allowed to go with shoes, or afundoso is the difference of what that means. It either means an undergarment as opposed to not properly dressed, or it means some sort of money belt, and then you're not allowed to go also with dirty feet, or or coins that are wrapped up in your scarf. So it seems to be that the chinuch is going with the idea that afundoso means not proper garments, and not money belt, because then he just talks about money belt now. Below Yasenu Kapandaria, you're not allowed to make the Beis HaMikdash a shortcut. So you're not allowed, if you want to go from Mount Scopus to, the Jewish quarter of Yerushalayim, you can't just cut through the Beis HaMikdash, which would obviously, otherwise you have to go all the way around. It's much longer. You're not allowed to do that. That you're not allowed to do that just to make the way shorter. If you have to worship in the Beis HaMikdash, then you can go in the Beis HaMikdash, then you can go out the other side. But if you're not doing that, you're just using it as a shortcut, because that's not allowed. You're not allowed to spit there. Perush vein tzarech lomar shasar makom birkika. They're given all these things which are less disgusting than spitting, so for sure you're not allowed to spit in the area of the Har HaBayis. Exactly? It just means like wearing, I don't know, what would be the equivalent nowadays, walking into the base of Mikdash with a fanny pack.
Oh, okay.
I know, something that looks like you're just a casual tourist as opposed to visiting a dignified place.
You have like a, you know, like a, actually a wallet or money, or your purse.
And maybe it's
money.
Not visible. Maybe it has to be should be tucked away in a pocket of your garments. It has to be something that is just not dignified to just walk in showing, oh, I'm carrying stuff, you know, I'm showing...
There's no objection to money being existing.
No.
Existing on the, okay.
No, definitely, yeah, you need money to buy karbanos. Oberu gamkin b'sanhedrin she'ein roi klal l'sheves ba'azara. You're not allowed to sit in the azara, not harabayis, in the actual temple courtyard. You're not allowed to sit down at all. Kim l'malchei beis David mishum kvod malchus. The only people allowed to sit in the azara are kings from the Davidic line. Shneimar v'yavu ha'melech David v'yeshu l'nei Hashem. That the king David came and he sat before God. V'amar b'sifra lo min ha'mikdash atayare ela mi shepokad al ha'mikdash. So the fear of the mikdash, of the temple, is not because you're afraid of the building. It's because you're afraid. It's as a mark of respect and of devotion to the one who dwells, figuratively, in this building.
So the people who stand for all of Yom Kippur, does that have anything to do with the...
I don't think it's directly tied to this, but it's just a mark of extra devotion, like Malachim. It's not for us nowadays. Sometimes we read about pious practices from the olden days, and they're not. It's not shy for us now. So some people, not us, I'm sure, but some youngins try to emulate all these things that they see in this forum as being pious practices of old. Not always a good idea. Usually not a good idea. Somebody, Rav Shetha, has a funny story where I think it was said it over from Rabbi Amital, the late Rosh Hashiva of Gush, that he used to learn. He learned in Hebron, I think, as a Bachar. Not necessarily in Hebron, the city, but the Hebron Yeshiva, which then moved to Yerushalayim. And he said that when the Mishnah Berurah came out, Rabbi Amital says, so nowadays when you have students at Yeshiva learning the Mishnah Berurah, then so a lot of times the Mishnah, everybody knows the Mishnah Berurah has a tendency towards stringency. So he often will say, even if he doesn't outright say you should be stringent, he said, you know, Baal Nefesh Yachmir, some, Baal Nefesh means a soul owner, literally, but it means a figuratively a conscientious person should be stringent about this particular topic. So Rabbi Amital said, so nowadays, Bacharim in Yeshiva learn the Mishnah Berurah, they get to a point where it says Baal Nefesh Yachmir, they think, oh, that means me. I'm a Yeshiva student, I'm conscientious, I need to be Machmir on this. He said when he was a young Yeshiva Bachar 70 years ago, in Hebron Yeshiva, they would learn the Mishnah Berurah. They would get to a point where it says Baal Nefesh Achmer, and they would say, maybe one day I'll be on the level that I could be Machmer on this. I'll be a Baal Nefesh. Midine HaMitzvah, Masha Amr Zichronim Livracha. What are the halachas? She'ein, Mishor She'amitzvah Zosh Kasavti L'malah B'mitzvah Sa'asuli Mikdash. Seder V'yikhuli Truma. Remember when it first gave the commandment to build the Mishkan, which means the Beis HaMikdash. Also, it's a mitzvah to say to build the Beis HaMikdash. And other places that we talk about the importance of treating the Beis HaMikdash with a proper frame of mind in order to be sufficiently influenced by the Karbanos, by the Tfilos. He mentioned it earlier in this mitzvah also, that if you don't have the proper mindset when thinking about the Beis HaMikdash, it's not going to have the effect on your soul that's desired when you worship there. Midine HaMitzvah, the halachos are as follows. Masha Amr Zichrono Livracha. She'ein adam nichnas b'chol harabayis elo l'dvar mitzvah. You can only go into harabayis at all if you have a need for a mitzvah. B'chol mish, just not because you feel like strolling and it's a pretty building.
Or sightseeing.
No, sorry, right, yeah. B'chol mi, although there were people who came to sightsee in the basement. I mean, I assume they came to maybe worship a little also, but it's very cute. They actually found signs in Greek, which is the lingua franca of the Middle East, when the Beis HaMikdash stood, and that were apparently placed at a certain point in the
so
Beis HaMikdash.
No,
so it said in Greek, so people would understand. It said only Jews are permitted past this point. Mm-hmm. The non-Jews were allowed to worship in the Beis HaMikdash, but they weren't allowed to go all the way in. Very interesting. Okay, so they were people. The Beis HaMikdash was considered one of the wonders of the world at the time. The Beis HaMikdash of Herod, which was one. You know, which is after approximately the turn of the first millennium. And people came to see it from all over the world because it was considered to be so unbelievably gorgeous. V'chol mi shehishlim avoda v'bayis v'nistalik mahalich achoranis mad mad. That when you finish your worship and you have to leave, so when you first start leaving, you walk backwards, which you know people, so we see people doing this at the Kotel nowadays, and it doesn't have the din of harabayis, it just has the din of a shul, really. But as a gesture of respect, so people walk backwards. And then you don't turn your back, you just walk sideways or something. If you can't keep walking backwards until you leave the place, it might be impractical. So the people who are worshipping there, so either the Kohanim or the Levim or the regular Israelites who were supervising the worship on the base of the Beis Hamikdash on behalf of the whole congregation, they all left the Beis Hamikdash in this manner. Oh, so the sages tell us a very interesting way to show our Mora Mikdash. So the Beis Hamikdash was situated from east to west. The Har HaBayis was a rectangle that was longer from north to south, and then the actual building sat from east to west in the middle. So it didn't take up, you know, there were large swaths of Har HaBayis on the top and the bottom, to the north and the south. So as a mark of respect to the Beis Hamikdash, that it was situated from east to west, so we neither relieve ourselves nor sleep in the east to west direction. We're supposed to always be facing, when we sleep or relieve ourselves, we're supposed to be facing north-south.
Oh. I mean, when you plan your build a house, you plan the bathrooms, you should have to...
Oh, so, while it's not clear from this, Sefer Chinuch, or from the Rambam when he quotes these dinim, that there are any exceptions whatsoever, as there are Chashulcha notes in Simon Gimel and Or Chaim. But the way we assume in Shulchan Aruch and the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch is A, that the issue about sleeping only applies to a husband and wife sleeping together, and the bit about relieving oneself only applies when one relieves oneself in an open area. So there's no barrier, so to speak, between you and the Beis HaMikdash, even though you might be in Russia, which is north, so you're not going to be facing it, Beis HaMikdash, whatever, even though it doesn't stand anymore. Nevertheless, it only applies in an open area, does not apply in a area that is surrounded by walls, by mechitzos, so it would not apply in an indoor bathroom. It should be very difficult to orchestrate this in New York City. The bathrooms in all different directions, depending on how it works with the planning of the building. And we assume that this doesn't apply to basically to relieving oneself at all nowadays. Well, there's also a din that you're not allowed to urinate facing... You're not to urinate from Mount Scopus inwards, meaning facing the... actually, in the visible distance of the Beis HaMikdash, but that obviously wouldn't apply nowadays because we can't see the Beis HaMikdash from New York. It's also a question whether that applies when the Beis HaMikdash is not standing at all. But in any event, in theory, the thing a bit about sleeping does apply, that the bed should be arranged from east to west as opposed to... I'm sorry, from north to south as opposed to from east to west. But the Aruch HaShulchan says people are not careful about this either. Why is that? So he said that... first of all, the Mishnah Berurah says that even if you want to be machmir on a person sleeping alone, even if it's not husband and wife, the prohibition only applies if the bed is not surrounded by poles and you're sleeping naked. But if you're sleeping clothed and the bed is surrounded by some sort of poles or something for tznias around it, so then it doesn't apply. But basically, the poskim are chipping away at this Isser Bichlal. Like, what's going on over here? It's sleeping. Nobody thinks about it. It's sleeping from north to south, or east to west. There's a Mora Mikdash. Who thinks about the base of Mikdash? Anyway, so the Aruch HaShulchan says, no, we assume, like, the tour holds that it's not an absolute halacha, that it's just a recommendation. But it's not an absolute halacha. And the Aruch HaShulchan also says something funny, which is that some poskim hold that when it says... It's not clear whether the directions refer to the width of the bed or the length of the bed. I think it's Pasha refers to the length of the bed. Of course, when you say the bed is arranged from north to south or east to west, you assume that means the length. Whatever it is, the Aruch HaShulchan notes that seems to be the common custom nowadays as well, that we're not careful on all these halachos. V'chein ozer l'adam livnos bayis tavnis heichal. So you're not allowed to build a house that looks like the sanctuary of the Beis HaMikdash. the achsadra tavnis ulam, and like a porch that looks like the ulam, which was the intermediate hall between the outside and the heichal, the sanctuary. So chotzer tavnis azara, you shouldn't have the dimensions of your backyard follow exactly the dimensions of the azara, no good. The chozel emoras hamakom. Same thing, that it's for your great respect and awe of the Beis HaMikdash, you're not supposed to try to copy it. The same thing applies to the vessels in the Beis HaMikdash. You're not allowed to have a menorah. I think we talked about this also when we were learning the Mitzvah Lo Sasun Iti, that you cannot make with me. What does that mean? So mostly it means you're not allowed to make pictures of the stars and sun and moon. You're not allowed to make pictures of those that, you know, serve God in the heavens. But according to, there's a difference in how you learn in the Gemara, as to whether that also applies to the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash and these dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash, or is purely a din of Mora Mako, Mora Mikdash, which the Rambam, and the Chinuch follows it, seems to think that it's part of the dinim of Mora Mikdash. But I believe we discussed it a little bit when we talked about Lo Sasun Iti as well. But you're not allowed to make a shulchan, a table that looks like a shulchan of the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to make a seven-branched metal candelabrum for the same reasons. So that's why...
The one out in front of the Knesset is,
Oh, well, is that true? I don't know. Is that sufficiently similar enough to the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash to be a problem? It's made of, yeah, maybe, but it's not actually a lamp.
Oh.
It's just a... No,
that's right. It's a statue, you know.
Right.
But it's a sculpture, rather, yeah.
And it was by the British government as a gift that...
oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh. So they didn't make it.
Right.
Yeah, but the dimensions, I don't think, are ma'akev. If the menorah has a certain dimension... So then I think if you make it bigger, so then it's okay, but the same thing, too, if you make it of other metals and you don't make all the designs, then it is okay, but the evidence. You can't have something that would suffice as a menorah. But if you make it of wood or something that would not work as the menorah at all in the Beis HaMikdash, then it would not be a problem. But yeah.
Is that the justification for making the menorah? Triangular, in a sense, like
Lubavitch. Oh, no.
That's a different reason.
That's the Rambam, right?
Right, the Rambam, in his commentary to the Mishnah, he draws a diagram of the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash, and it has, you normally think of the menorah as having curved branches, but the Rambam draws it as having straight branches. So, first of all, the question is, was it just a diagram, or did the Rambam really mean to Paskin that the menorah had straight branches instead of curved branches? That's number one.
Maybe he said that's the shape that a menorah should be in order to be different from the one.
No, he's drawing a diagram of the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash so you learn what it looked like, not telling you what you're allowed to make nowadays. And secondly, even if the Rambam meant that he held that the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to have straight branches, it's not so clear that's correct. Maybe the Rambam was not right about that, because we have the Arch of Titus where a contemporary depiction of carrying the spoils from Yerushalayim back to Rome, and one of the things that they're carrying is the menorah and it has curved branches. And also, there are many mosaics there from Eretz Yisrael, from synagogues that depict scenes from the Beis HaMikdash, and they always depict the menorah with curved branches. It seems that historically the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash did in fact have curved branches. But the Lubavitcher Rebbe said that, no, it's a mistake. The Rambam is right. We paskin like, who was very into the Rambam? We paskin like the Rambam. So the menorah, you have to know that the menorah had straight branches and not curved branches. And who says those depictions? They could have been from other lamps. You know, they're from the Beis HaMikdash. Not the lamp. No. It's not. The Pashtus certainly is that the menorah and the Beis HaMikdash that in fact have curved branches and not straight branches. Right, but they want to show, they're beshita about it, they're bedavka, they want to tell everyone, lahotzi miliban, that it had curved branches, they want to make the point so everybody should learn that no, it's not correct, the menorah are really supposed to have straight branches. That's why they always make the Hanukkah menorah with straight branches also, yeah?
Excuse the digression, but do we assume that...
V'noheges mitzvah zo bizchar munikevos b'chol makom. It applies in all places. You have to fear the Beis HaMikdash and the Har HaBayis appropriately, even though it's destroyed. That's the vast majority opinion, though there is the famous opinion of the Ravid, which maybe sounds like he holds that nowadays that the Beis HaMikdash does not have Kedusha at all, the area of the Beis HaMikdash. That's a very minority opinion, and it's questionable whether it would apply to this mitzvah even. The Menachas Chinuch points out that the point is just Musar, that we're supposed to respect the Beis HaMikdash, so maybe even according to the Ravid, it does apply to the Beis HaMikdash nowadays. This mitzvah does apply nowadays as well, even though you would be allowed to maybe go on Har HaBayis, or in the Azara, because it wouldn't have Kedusha. You're only allowed to go to the Har HaBayis area. You're not allowed to sit even in the courtyard, let alone in the place where the building used to stand. Huh? How can you get into the Azara? So the answer is, Chaim Kanievsky, I was quoted as giving this answer in his commentary to the Rambam, which is that even if you had to go for Pikuach Nefesh or something, like, you know, who knows, that somebody... Yeah, well, hard to imagine what kind of case that would be. But even if you have to go in for pikuach nefesh, you're not allowed to sit down. Below yokel rosho keneged shar hamizrach, you're not allowed to engage in frivolity opposite the eastern gate, because the eastern gate, which is what faced the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the innermost sanctum, shenemar shabbos osayti shmoru migdoshi tiro, that you shall observe my Sabbaths and fear my sanctuary. Just as we have to keep Shabbos forever, so too do we have to keep to fear the Beis HaMikdash forever. If you violate this and you act frivolously with these regarding these things, so you neglected to perform this positive commandment. So I think I didn't get to this time. But there's something very important that I will try to open with next week, which is how this mitzvah applies also to Mikdash Mat synagogue. So we'll open with that next time, the fearing of synagogues.